At Clinica Medicos here in Chattanooga, family physicians care for residents in the Latino community who are uninsured, underserved, and difficult to reach, as we have seen during the pandemic. Dr. Kelly Rodney Arnold is the founder and medical director of Clinica Medicos. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Tell us more about Clinica Medicos.
Clinica Medicos is really a community clinic that was founded over 6 years ago to provide solutions inside of challenging healthcare problems. And where our focus really was from the beginning and continues to be was to provide comprehensive care to the underserved, uninsured Latino community of Chattanooga. And to this day, that is our banner. When I say comprehensive care, a lot of people ask me, what does that mean? And so Clinica Medicos really reflects and represents a urban mini mission hospital site, in our view, which means all of our experiences that my partners and I, Dr. Sutherland, Dr. Metter, had over the years of training, we were going to take those experiences from the global mission field and distill them inside of one site in an urban setting, even connected to an academic unit, and provide broad spectrum of services that we had as really mission physicians. And that meant taking care of patients in the cradle to grave model, which sounds a bit morbid, but everything is beautiful as delivering a child to taking care of an entire family, and that can be multi-generational throughout all of their acute and chronic healthcare needs. As family physicians, we are all trained to offer a host of services inside of pediatrics, obstetrics, internal medicine, acute care, and chronic care management. So that looks like the delivery of babies, to the worker's injury, to the management of diabetes, to the vaccinating of children for school entry. It's a host of things. It really is complete family care, in which oftentimes we'll have a mother, a father, and their children in the room, and we are addressing all of their needs inside of one appointment.
And speaking of multi-generational, mm-hmm. you come from a family with a multi-generational background in medicine.
I absolutely do. Medicine runs through my veins. It is what drives me. It is what fuels me. It is the recorded stories in my mind as a child, ranging from my great-grandmother, Mary McMillan, all the way down to now myself. My middle name's McMillan. And in our family, medicine always represented the nobility of serving those who needed help and those who had the least and those who were underserved and those who were marginalized. That is the narrative of the Rodney name inside of medicine. And so to me, there is nothing that I am prouder of aside of being a wife and a mother than being a physician dedicated to lifting people up and serving people inside of their time of need. And that's where, during my training, being a part of the Latino community here inside of the community hospital, it really grabbed my soul and grabbed a hold of me as a way to make an impact inside of serving those who probably needed it the most.
How did you connect to the Latino community, the Latino culture, before coming here?
Well, growing up in Southern California, it was really a part of the social mix that I lived inside of, honestly. And so the language, the culture, the food was part of my everyday surroundings, whether that was being in Los Angeles, whether that was being in Redlands, that was being in the school, that was being in the church. This was our community. And so the culture itself was familiar. And so as I really took a liking to it, on my own volition, that is, we moved to Tennessee, there wasn't that much influence in mainstream culture. I continued to feel hungry to have that exposure and to continue to be inside of it, regardless of my professional drive or dreams as a physician. It really was something that complemented who I was and wanted to be. And I would say that I really sunk into it with my first abroad trip in college when I decided to go on my own to Puebla, Mexico. And it was a very introspective, reflective time. I was a pretty mature college student who was really looking sort of for intellectual fulfillment. I loved to study. And I still have the journals. And I was recalling this recently. I don't know if I've ever told this about my story. But I still have the journals in which I remember wandering around downtown Puebla, which is absolutely beautiful, and writing to myself, this will always be a part of my life. This is a part of me. I will always be dedicated to this community and this culture in some way, not knowing where that path would lead. But that dovetailed nicely into understanding and feeling the need to really take care of what was an extremely underserved community inside of Chattanooga at the time and place when I could, as a physician who had the positioning to make a plan and really drive home a result, which was that I wanted to be involved in the community and I also wanted to elevate the level of healthcare for people that I thought really needed it, really deserved it, and whom I wanted to dignify.
And how would you describe this underserved community compared to Latino communities that you encountered in California or that you know are in or around larger cities such as New York City, for example? Mm-hmm. This is a very different constellation for that underserved community when we're talking about Southeast Tennessee and Northwest Georgia, whether we're talking about Chattanooga or down into Dalton.
Mm-hmm. To generalize, the heart is all the same, right? And the culture still has many different pieces of fabric within the quilt. To speak of the Latino culture is just an absolutely massive conversation that takes on languages and dialects and different foods and different religions. The heart of it, to me, feels very much the same. But when you're talking about more urbanized, more metropolitan and larger areas, whether that's Los Angeles, whether that's New York, compared to Chattanooga, Tennessee, I would say that vastly different is probably the breadth of the advocacy platform. And so that comes into the growth of the community here, Latino community, is relatively new in terms of being on everyone's radar. And in terms of saying, how do we establish equity? Wow, we have a large population now in our Hamilton County schools. What do we do about that?
And growing.
Exactly. And so I think that when I say the heart of the community is probably the same, I think that the difference among those cities would be to say that for the community members, we're in a position where we are still really learning, still digging to understand, still trying to find solutions, and still inside of a large amount of space in which we could, I think, be larger advocates in growing the community in a really healthy way as it is burgeoning. A lot of those things that I've just mentioned are much more heavily solidified, I'd say, in states that are much more accustomed to the Latino community, or they've had Latino communities that are now, you know, really a almost majority for decades. So there is, I'd say, a difference really sort of in how cities administratively put their arms around the Latino community.
And then how did this all come together for you once you came here envisioning and deciding to create Clínica Médicos?
I had seen the model before. It's really when I was saying medicine is in my veins. My parents had done something similar as really a family project on the north side of Memphis almost 35 years ago. So I had a vision of what could be, but at the same time, I knew that Chattanooga was unique. The population was unique. My relationships inside of Chattanooga with patients were unique. And I started very simply, and I went for it. This vision being as naive at the time as I was, and really garnering the support of people who were equally aligned in mission and purpose. So these were people. Started with five, Dr. Sutherland being there from the very beginning, Dr. Metter, and saying, we love this community. We've worked in community hospitals. We know what the needs are at a very base level. That is, there is no easy solution that exists yet for people who are undocumented, who speak Spanish only, who have difficulty in transportation and cannot cater to the healthcare system that fragments people through multi-specialty groups in a way that logistically is indefensible. And so what does it look like at a very, very, in a simplistic recipe, in trying to put all that together, where we have a model and we really invert the paradigm? We're doing everything now sculpted around the needs of the patient versus the patient being put inside of our system and trying to navigate what they can according to our needs. And so the start of it was as simple, honestly, as the acquisition of an empty building, which I thought was in the perfect geographical location, sketching out the design on graph paper, writing out a budget, which I had never done for anything inside of healthcare administration before, and assembling a team of people who had the heart to say, whatever comes through the door, we are going to try to be the solution. And whether that is a pregnant woman who does not have prenatal care and does not have insurance, or that is a child who drives from Tracy City with his mother because they need vaccines to start to school and they don't understand the system, whatever that might be, or that's a laborer who is on site and endures a work injury but will not go to the emergency room out of fear, whatever those things are that we have seen and have had to close the door on before because we weren't in charge, we're going to be that solution. And that's really how it grew, was inside of patient-driven solutions based on our experiences that honestly, we had reached really kind of a threshold of feeling helpless and hopeless and heartbroken over.
What challenges have you and your colleagues faced and may still face when it comes to interacting with this community, coming in from the outside? Because we talk about equity, but we also talk about trust and people wanting care, feeling most comfortable with people from their own community. You come from outside that community as much as you have the experience that you do, both in your life and your work, you come from outside and you have colleagues who come from outside as well. How have you tried to bridge that?
Well, in my training, honestly, at Erlanger, and then as faculty at the Department of Family Medicine, where I still teach and I bridge the academic effort with the community clinic, I started slowly to really gather a Latino community of patients that found their way to our facility because I was a Spanish speaker, I had a heart, and by word of mouth, I became a trusted entity in taking care of patients. And around 2010, I started gathering a large group of patients that were Cuban political refugees in Chattanooga. So the trust grew at a very organic level in which I was in an academic group, seeing Latino patients, translating in the hospital, and really laying the foundation for what would then be the springboard to the patient population we had inside of Clinica Medicos. So when I opened the clinic and I let people know where I was going, many of my Latino patients followed and found where we were. And there's nothing that builds more trust among patients than to see their community members speaking positively on our behalf. So it really grew organically that way, patient by patient. Most of the patients who came to our site, it was, and it still is, word of mouth. This is legitimate. This is affordable. They are nice. They care for you. And so it grew like that, and the trust was really patient by patient, word of mouth as seeds inside of the community. But I also think that on top of that, what I found to be vitally important from the beginning was that all of our staff would not even externally reflect the patients we were attracting. That is, that they were 100% going to be bilingual. They were going to be Latino. That was really important to me. But at the same time, they also, and in the interview process, I took this as a key element, were also aware with the struggles that not only they, but their parents had had inside of the healthcare system as immigrants, as people whose first language wasn't English, without insurance, that they had an empathy inside of them that would connect them further to patients beyond just externally being part of the same community. So that was, I think, crucial in building trust inside of our community, that there was a shared narrative between our staff and our patients. Beyond that, a lot of it has been community outreach. A lot of it has been really the sincerity of time, which is we have been there every day. We have had the doors open every day, and we have been consistent. That is huge inside of trust, and that we're always open for questions. So I think there's the people part of the equation, and then there is just the consistency part of the equation, that you say and do the same thing, and you have now a brand over years where that is held true. And so a lot of that, I think, has been important inside of the equation of building trust.
You've talked about the immigrant background in your own family from mm-hmm. another country, from another culture. Talk to us more about that here and how you see that shaping what you do and how you do it.
My family was really spread all across the United States of America, but my existence inside of this country begins with the fact that my grandfather, Rocco Ruggiero, came to this country. That's why I am here, and was greeted at Ellis Island and given a start and a shot at his dream. And to me, that story of his arrival and everything that he rested on top of, the kindness of strangers and the opportunities for him to build a life, for him to become a dentist, for him to serve in the military as an oral surgeon, all of those successes in his life and what he found to be a fulfilled life as an American, he attributed to the way that people allowed the path to be open to him. And I feel a very large human indebtedness, knowing that I am a product of that success, and I am the product of the kindness of strangers, to bestow that upon those inside of our community that I see seeking the same thing. And that I think there is a real beauty and a spiritual revenue inside of fulfilling that legacy that extends then to so many generations. And so when I look at the immigrant population, I see my grandfather, I see myself, and who would I be to neglect such an important part of my history, and with all that I have been given in my life, not try to give that back to someone else?
The last year plus of the pandemic in this area, it's been less than 18 months, but it seems a lot longer than just 18 months.
Yeah.
Share with us how Clínica Médicos has had to adjust and adapt again and again through this time. What are some examples? What are some of the things that you and your colleagues have learned, have done?
Really, the pandemic, I think, for a community clinic such as ours, it couldn't have happened inside of a better space with a better staff, honestly. Adaptability, flexibility, that is our operating platform. And when we go back to how we started, everything was around what solutions do we need to come up with today? We had no roadmap. And that is part of our calling. So when the pandemic came, it was a very familiar feeling for us to say, okay, we don't have a roadmap, but what can we do? How can we again reinvigorate ourselves inside of the mission to do everything we see and everything we feel and everything we know that's crashing down upon our patients? And there was a lot, from food insecurity, financial instability, housing insecurity, let alone physical illness. So it brought about a lot of challenges, and my partners, Dr. Metter and Sutherland, and I, I'll never forget March 13th, 2020, sat down and we said, we are not closing our doors. We are going to go bigger for our patients. We are going to make this work with every ounce of courage that we have, and we would rather fail trying than to sit insecurity, waiting for PPP and allowing this whole challenge to go by, knowing that our patients are hurt. So we decided very adamantly that our mission and our operation was going to operate exactly as it always had. Inside of our 7-day-a-week model, we were going to follow CDC guidelines and be as safe as we could, but we couldn't become blinded to all of the other needs of our patients that went alongside COVID. So we got a grant from Community Partners, Community Foundation, Blue Cross Blue Shield to provide medical care free the month of April for all of our patients. We secured grants to build on we called it the COVID cabana in the back to set up 7-day-a-week accessible drive-through services for our patients so that they were met in a culturally comfortable area, that they understood the economics of what was going on, that it would be open 7 days a week, that it would be purely in their language, that we would be open to answer any questions, that these would be their trusted physicians. We wouldn't send them away. So now 17,000 COVID tests later and almost 15,000 newly registered patients through the pandemic, we amplified everything that we did to take on all that was needed to learn about the nuances of COVID-19 care and how we could keep our patients safe, how we could keep their families safe, and then further, how could we address all those social determinants of health inside of COVID. So it taught us a lot also about the social needs of our patients, the advocacy needed for our patients inside of employment. And we hired an entirely new team dedicated to not only COVID-19 relief, but to the social fabric of our patients. And so it was a really enlightening period for us that set aside any patient suffering, which there was a lot. There were also a lot of victories. And there's a beautiful story in which we had a patient, female, this was in May, and she was going to be the first member of her family to graduate from high school. And the graduation was taking place at Finley Stadium. Well, unfortunately, she was COVID-19 positive. And she let us know that she was going to be unable to attend her graduation. And her family at that was now going to miss this opportunity to see her walk and get her diploma. Well, our staff took it upon themselves to do a parade graduation where she stood on her doorstep with her family and gifts were given to her. And Clinica Medico showed up on that graduation day to give her the graduation that her family and she so longed for. And so all of those moments inside of COVID-19 really shed light on how we were there not only medically, but I think also personally and spiritually for a lot of our patients. And in the end, I'm an optimist and I look at things very positively. And I think that overall, I think we provided a lot of healing in ways beyond a test and a medication prescription.
Another aspect to all of this is collaboration and partnership. Not only you and your colleagues there, but how you and your colleagues have worked with and work with this community.
Correct. When you ask about the start of the clinic, which there were 5 of us, and it was, to begin with, very independent venture, that we just had our eye on the prize. We knew exactly what we wanted to do, and we knew how we wanted to usurp, really, the model that we saw to serve patients. It has grown into something that I believe is much more rich and complex than an individual solo mission of physicians, to now be a really collaborative effort among many community partners inside of Chattanooga. And that's been a really unforeseen and beautiful part of our existence. And that ranges from foundations to private individual donors to municipal leaders, all getting behind this effort to rally support to help the needs of the Latino community inside of Chattanooga.
What's next?
Oh, there are such fun, exciting things to announce. Next is growth. Next is growth through and through. And we have now a staff of almost 50 people. And we dream a lot, and the dreams don't stop inside of what we do, and the needs don't stop inside of the patients we serve. And so we have our roadmap out again. There's no prescribed formula on how the next 10 years should look, but we have our ideas, and in the near future, we hope to be back and have some really exciting announcements about our plans.
And we look forward to talking about them when the time comes. In the meantime, if people want more information, if they want to give help, if they need help, how can they contact you?
Well, on our website, which is www.clinicamedicos.org, there's information that's there. There is also a donation tab under the menu. And I think that, again, as we talk about exciting news ahead, I think that's going to be when a great announcement comes out in ways in which people can help, and we'll have a really direct path to do that.
All right. Kelly, thanks so much.
Ray, thank you for having me, and I look forward to being back.
Same here.